Greetings. Welcome to the Wise River Advisors Mid-Year Update with Richard Bernstein. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star zero. This conference is being recorded Friday, June 24th, 2022. Now I'd like to turn the conference over to Mark Binder. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Well, welcome everyone to what we're calling a mid-year update for the macro economy and markets. We are today joined by Richard Bernstein, who founded Richard Bernstein & Associates, LLC, in 2009. Before founding the company, Richard was the chief investment strategist at Merrill Lynch & Company, and then prior to that held positions at EF Hutton and Chase Econometrics, IDC. Rich is a much-noted expert on equity-style asset allocation. Just to give you some of his background and accolades, Richard was voted to Institutional Investor Magazine's annual All-American Research Team 18 times. He's been inducted into the Institutional Investor Hall of Fame. He was also twice named to both Fortune Magazine's All-Star Analyst and to Smart Money Magazine's Power 30. We have known Richard for over 25 years and value his insights and his opinion. So, Richard, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to share your thoughts and your insights with our team and with our clients. I'm going to get started with a first question for you, and I'm going to keep it at a very high level. So I wanted to start with your macro view of the global economy. So the Federal Reserve most recently raised Fed funds rate by 75 basis points in their last meeting. Jerome Powell has suggested that he is finally bringing down inflation seriously, and that the Federal Reserve will more than likely raise rates another 75 basis points at the next meeting, and also begin quantitative tightening, allowing $100 billion potentially per month to roll off their balance sheet, taking M2 money supply out of the economy. In addition, Richard, the market is pricing in a terminal Fed funds rate of approximately 3.5 to 4%. So my question is, with the Fed tightening, as well as other central banks around the world doing the same, what is the chance that we see a significant slowdown and or a recession, and what would be your best guess as to when that might occur?
Right. So, Mark, thanks for the nice introduction. Craig and Mark and Craig, thanks for the opportunity to speak, and I hope everybody's well. I think, look, there's no doubt that the Fed is kind of talking the talk right now about inflation, and they are raising rates, and I think everybody knows that. The question, though, is where do they stand relative to inflation? I think everybody knows that there's 40-year high in inflation. We certainly don't have a 40-year high in interest rates to go along with that. So I think the question that one has to ask is, you know, is the Fed behind inflation, and how far behind inflation are they? And I think that's kind of the key point, because I think people are a little bit freaking out at what they hear. Certainly inflation is hurting consumer confidence, of course. But I think people are kind of freaking out a little bit about all this. And the reality is the Fed is historically behind inflation. They are getting more aggressive, of course, but we've described it as hunting elephants with a pea shooter. They're fighting. They're doing a hard time, but they're really not being aggressive enough. And, you know, in an environment where they really should be carrying a bazooka, they're carrying a pea shooter. I don't like to talk numbers, especially on a call. It's very difficult for people to understand this, but I think it's worthwhile just giving you three numbers here. Something called the real Fed funds rate, which is the Fed funds rate, the Fed's policy setting interest rate, minus the inflation rate. Okay, that is a very good indicator of how tight or easy the Fed is. Every recession in the last 50 years, 5-0, every recession in the last 50 years was preceded by a positive real Fed funds rate. And the long-term average real Fed funds rate is 1%. If you go back to 1980, when Paul Volcker was chair of the Federal Reserve and inflation was, you know, high like it is today, The real Fed funds rate was plus 10%. That's the bazooka that I was talking about before, 10% versus the long-term average of 1. Today, it's minus 7%. That is the most negative real Fed funds rate in history outside of what we saw a month ago or 2 months ago. So we have an historically low real Fed funds rate. I don't think because of that, it's very hard to imagine that the Fed is actively, I mean, strongly fighting inflation. And I think in this whole notion of hard landing versus soft landing, in other words, do we slow inflation with a recession or without a recession, I think that's a false dichotomy. I think there's a third option, and the third option might be that we just don't land, that this whole situation goes on for longer than people expect, and that, yes, we do have a recession, but it could be a 23-24 event instead of a 22-23 event, which I think is what most people are worried about. So personally, I'm not quite as worried about an imminent recession as a lot of other people are.
So just as a follow-up to that, just a real quick follow-up on that. So is it possible that they don't have a bazooka, but because they've got a pea shooter, is it possible that at some point they're going to have to find themselves dropping a 500-pound bomb, that they're going to have to get much more aggressive and then throw us into an even deeper recession because they keep getting behind this inflationary curve?
Yeah, well, Mark, that's a real, yeah, I mean, they could drop a huge bomb because historically what tends to happen is that the Fed panics, right? They play catch up a little bit and they panic and they realize, and I think to some extent that's a normal human response. You know, we posited a while ago that inflation would go through three different human phases here. The first one would be it was temporary. Remember, the Fed used the word transitory. The second phase would be that everybody would say, gee, it's worse than we thought. That's kind of where we are today. And the third phase would be that people would say it's never going to end. We're not quite there yet, but that's the period where the Fed panics. And so you're right. They may play catch-up. They may throw away the pea shooter and come out with a tremendous bazooka or some RPG launcher or whatever military analogy you want to use. Yeah, they could do something like that, of course, yeah.
So, Rich, let's translate the macro view to specifically what's going on in the equity markets. Obviously, we've seen a significant sell-off on our calculations. The PE multiple on the S&P 500 has come down about 6 multiple points, which is a significant valuation adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
So based on the macro view that you just described, do you believe at this point, and by the way, given your view that a recession is a 2023 or 2024 event, do you believe that stocks at this point are fairly valued? Do you see additional downside in anticipation of a recession that may be further out than many experts believe? And do you ultimately see do you ultimately see that the market has more downside as earnings estimates get revised down, mm-hmm. which we haven't really seen much of?
Mm-hmm. So Craig, I think the answer to your question is I think people should think of the stock market as a seesaw, where kind of the fulcrum of the seesaw is the market to some extent. And on one side of that seesaw, you've got all the sexy stuff. You've got the stuff that was really, really, really overvalued, all the tech, the innovation, disruption, cryptocurrencies, you know, to some extent real estate, housing prices, things like that. And on the other side of the seesaw, you have virtually everything else around the world, which really didn't get that expensive and to a large extent has been undervalued for quite some time. So I think what we're seeing on the sexy side of that seesaw is we saw kind of phase one here where interest rates started to go up and valuations started to reprice, right? We know that as interest rates go up, PE multiples compress. That's exactly what you were just talking about. We've seen interest rates go up. We've now seen PE multiples compress. What we haven't gotten to is the fundamental side of the equation yet. We're still, as you point out, are there going to be earnings estimate revisions still to come? My guess is that the answer to that is yes. Especially on the sexy side of that seesaw. I mean, you'll see some on the other side, of course, right? I mean, the economy is the economy. But where you saw expectations get really out of whack we're on the, you know, the tech innovation disruption, the sexy stuff on that side of the seesaw. So, you know, I think if one is still a risk-averse investor, maybe people aren't, right? But, I mean, if one is still a risk-averse investor, I think that's the side you want to worry about of the seesaw. There's plenty of things around the world that are counter-cyclical. There's plenty of things around the world that present opportunities. But, you know, still people are pretty focused on that sexy side of the seesaw.
Rich, do you – I know you don't publish, but do you, I'm assuming internally you have – you're working from S&P 500 as an example for the U.S. stock market, mm-hmm. Earnings estimates. And I would say going into the year, the estimate for 2022 was about $230 a share. Do you have a view on that, or maybe 12 months out? And are you, in your models, bringing that estimate down yet?
So that's an interesting question. We don't actually make a dollar estimate, but what we do look at very closely is what's commonly called the profit cycle. That's the growth rate in earnings as opposed to the actual dollar number. So, you know, it ranges from, you know, plus 25 to minus 25 through time, and it goes back and forth and back and forth. And we focus on that very, very closely. And you know, right now profits growth is just beginning to slow. It peaked at about, I'm going to say, I don't have the numbers in front of me, I'm going to say it was roughly about 30% profits growth. It peaked, it's slowly starting to decelerate. It's probably about 15 to 20 now from that 30. It's our view by the end of the year, it'll be flirting with zero, and that starting next year, we could have a profit recession, meaning that the growth rate in corporate profits in the United States goes negative. So the number, you know, we don't look at the underlying number, but for our perspective, we would argue the underlying number is still going up. It is just going up at a slower pace than it was before. As we hit 23, we're starting to expect that number to start coming down in actual, you know, dollar value. But we don't really make a forecast per se of the dollar value of earnings. But I think in terms of the profit cycle, and the reason that's so important is that as profit cycles decelerate, and certainly as you hit a profits recession, you want to make your portfolio, the equity portion of your portfolio, much less cyclical. And in fact, that's what we've been doing on our side. You know, I mean, we're not going to wait till January to start doing that. I mean, we are positioned in terms of what's usually called late cycle, and then defensive stocks. So late cycle would be things like energy and commodities and things like that, and defensives would be things like consumer staples, food stocks, that type of thing, healthcare and utilities. So we're kind of straddling those two parts of the market right now.
So Rich, have you brought down your equity, overall equity allocation going into this year? Relative to bonds and commodities? And if so, I know that in the past, and I go back to the pandemic, March of, you know, of 2020, you know, you have a strong bias towards catching markets on the way up and being a little bit late getting back in. But one of the things we've done, you know, for our clients is on the fixed income side, we have relatively short durations because inflation is a problem, and it seems like it could be, like you say, a persistent problem. So a relatively short duration, we don't have a lot of credit exposure, but there will come a point when we are at the bottom of this recession or downturn where we might be setting ourselves up for a very nice recovery. I'm curious if you've adjusted your allocation going into this period, and if so, you know, on the fixed income side, knowing that inflation is potentially a problem, you know, how have you positioned yourself there?
Right. So we haven't spent as much time worrying about the equity weight in the portfolio for two reasons. One is we think there are opportunities outside the United States, right? I mean, people are very focused on NASDAQ and all that and what's going on there, but they're forgetting what's going on around the world. And I'll just point it to everybody on the call. I haven't looked through today. I've been traveling a lot this week, but the last time I looked, which was, I believe, Monday, developed markets were outperforming the United States, and emerging markets, excluding China, was actually outperforming the United States. So we think there's still plenty of opportunities around the world, and between that and our defensive posture, we haven't really reduce the equity weight per se. However, that being said, we have significantly lowered the equity sensitivity, what's commonly called the beta of the portfolio. You know, how much does your portfolio respond to market movements? And we've significantly lowered that. We got up to about 1.1 or 1.2 beta, meaning that our portfolio would go up, you know, on average 10%, you know, 11% for every 10% or 12% for every 10% move in the market. We're now down to about 0.8, 0.9, somewhere in that range, depending on the portfolio that we're running. That's a pretty big change. I mean, it's not a one-to-one relationship. I don't want everybody to think that, you know, necessarily it's going to go up or down by the numbers I just said. But that's a pretty significant change in the equity sensitivity of the portfolio. And so we always try to pull two levers. One lever would be the equity weight. The other would be the actual sensitivity to the marketplace within the equity portfolio. And so we're about, our benchmark in our flagship portfolio is about 50% equities. Right now we're about 54% equities. So, you know, realistically, pretty much equal weight. That is much lower than where we were, you know, 3, 5, 10 years ago. 3, 5, 10 years ago, we were probably 70-75% equities. I mean, we were hitting ceilings on our allowable equity allocations. You know, now we're kind of middle of the road, kind of, but a much lower equity sensitivity.
Rich, on the fixed income side of the portfolio, we've obviously seen shorter term interest rates move up dramatically. About 8 months, the yield on the 2-year Treasury was 20 basis points, and now we're right around 3%, and we're higher. A week or so ago. How do you see the whole yield curve shifting over time? Do you still see rates moving higher from here, or do you see the yield curve flattening or inverting? What's your outlook? And from that answer, how are you positioning fixed income portfolios?
Right. So right now we are still shorter duration than the benchmark, and I'll give you some numbers on that. The Barclays aggregate, which is actually it's a Bloomberg aggregate now. They sold it to Bloomberg. The Bloomberg aggregate has a duration of about 6.5 years. Right now we're about 4.5, take or leave a little bit on that. We were even shorter. So on the margin, we've extended our duration a little bit. I think as we get closer, or if we saw indications that we were really heading for a recession, you would see us extend duration very dramatically, right? I mean, there's kind of, you know, not many rules of thumb, but one of them is that if you believe that you're in a recession or you're going into a recession, you know, you want to extend duration. Now, what complicates that right now is that the Fed is initiating this month in June. Has been initiating what's commonly called quantitative tightening. In other words, they're starting to let the balance sheet that they built up by buying long-term bonds, they're starting to let that run off. And so that complicates things, because that puts upward pressure on the long end of the curve instead of the normal downward pressure that you might be seeing at this point. So we're still short duration. We're watching indicators very carefully because if we do get a recession, that changes the story quite a bit. But in an environment where inflation is still surprising, in an environment where the Fed, we think, is behind inflation, and while they're starting QT, we think it's still prudent to be short duration. But obviously, you know, if one thinks it's going to be a recession tomorrow, you wouldn't want to be short duration.
And what about reduced credit exposure? You beat me to it, Craig.
Credit exposure. So we had some credit. We had a lot of credit exposure while the profit cycle was accelerating, right? I mean, you know, when credit is when credit spreads are very wide, lower quality bonds tend to act like equity. There's a lot of equity in the bonds, and so when profit cycles accelerate, you know, you can think of high yield bonds as being kind of pseudo equity. You know, sort of equity and bond drag, if you will. But when profit cycles decelerate, that usually occurs when spreads are very narrow. And when spreads are narrow, you're getting more of you don't get the credit protection in the bond. And so as the profit cycle has started to decelerate, what you'll find in our portfolios is that we've been significantly reducing our credit exposure. In some portfolios recently, we actually got rid of it, depending on the portfolio that we have. Just because, you know, look, what's default a function of? Default is a function of corporate cash flows. So if corporate cash flows are under pressure, you should expect default rates to go up, and you should expect credit spreads to widen and risk premium to increase. If cash flows are strengthening, that's a whole different story. But it looks like we're heading into a period where cash flows are going to be under pressure a little bit. So we want to be a little bit more careful with our credit sensitivity in our portfolios.
I'm going to ask a big picture question of you. You've been a strategist for many, many years. You've been through multiple market cycles. In my mind, this is a business cycle issue, kind of boom bust typical, except I call it almost a boom and bust cycle on steroids because of some of the exogenous events, whether it's supply chain or war in Ukraine, but still it's the Federal Reserve adding too much monetary money supply, taking it out, being behind the curve, having to catch up, throwing us into a slowdown. It seems like a sort of an accelerated but a normal economic cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But the question I have for you, and I think it would be really interesting for all of our clients to hear from someone who's been doing this a very, very long time, is just, to be a successful investor, I think Warren Buffett said, in order to try to make, extra normal returns in stocks, you have to be willing to give up 38% every now and then.
Right.
And I think what I'd love to hear from you is your insights, and having done this for over 30 years, of the mentality or how to look at these cycles, how to kind of condition yourself as you go into these downturns to have a long-term view and to sort of what it takes to sort of successfully weather the storm.
Yep.
And get out of it on the other side.
So that's an interesting question. I'm going to answer it in two ways. Number one is that one of the arguments, you mentioned I used to be the chief strategist at Merrill, and one of the things I used to tell clients back then was that volatility in the marketplace always signals a change in leadership within the financial markets. In other words, you have some group of stocks that's outperforming, and that group of stocks was suited to a certain economic environment, whatever it was, right? They were suited to some economic environment. Then the economic environment starts changing, and you get sort of a changing of the guard. And the changing of the guard is what we call volatility, because the old stock market leadership is no longer geared to the economic environment. And so it starts to fall to underperform. That's the volatility, because they dominate the marketplace. And some new stock market leadership starts to appear because it's better suited to the new economic environment. And so what happens is that people see volatility, and they do two things. Number one, they want the old stuff to come back. They don't want to admit that maybe the world is changing and maybe the portfolio should change too. And they dive under their desk in the fetal position. And that's just not a very good way to invest. I mean, the world changes, and to think that some set of stocks is made for every economic environment is just completely untrue. That's never been true through all history. It's certainly not going to be true now. So I think it's important to remember that volatility signals a changing of the guard, and there's always new opportunities. And rather than getting under your desk in the fetal position, it's worthwhile trying to search out those new opportunities, because they're inevitably going to come. It's just not going to be the old story returning. That's one, number one. Number two, what I've told people recently, and I've asked this question rhetorically, is I say, you mentioned Warren Buffett, and that's what reminded me of this story. Why does Warren Buffett own a property casualty insurance company? I always ask that question. And the answer is because people consistently overestimate the probability of bad things occurring. That's just human nature. And if you have a good actuary, and you know what the real probability of events occurring is, and you know what people think the probability is, the difference between perception and reality is called profit and cash flow. And so he uses his property casualty insurance company as a source of funding so he can go and invest in other things. In other words, he uses other people's fear to fund his operation. Right? Now, that doesn't mean bad things don't happen. Of course they do. You have a hurricane every now and then. You have tornadoes, ice storms, floods. Bad stuff happens, but you have to be very dispassionate in assessing what's the probability of bad things happening. And as an investor, I think that is a critically important skill to learn, is to keep your wits about you, understand what's going on in the market, and try to figure out what the next big story is going to be. Nobody wants to do that, but that would be the – that's you know, you mentioned you're kindly saying I'm old, going through many market cycles, but it's I think that's the lesson that people should learn from multiple cycles, is that it's not the end of the free world as we know it. Rather, the free world is changing, and your portfolio should change too.
It's very
so, Rich, as we close. And this is how we've closed most of our conversations that we've had with you. The equity markets today, you know, measured by the S&P, is down around 18%. And what's notable, and we haven't really seen this, is that the whole universe of bonds are also down year-to-date with a shift up in interest rates. That's unusual, and it's disconcerting for clients. What advice do you have for us and for our clients in moments like this, where not only has the performance going back 6 months been pretty, pretty startling, but we also have storm clouds on the horizon with, as you described, the potential for a recession, whether it's this year, next year, or the year after? What advice do you have for us and our clients as we navigate these markets?
Right. I think you know, steady as she goes. how many different analogies can I use? Steady as she goes. You know, the water's going to be rough. There's no doubt about that, right? I think we know that's going to happen. So if you know the water's going to get rough, yeah, you just batten down the hatches. You know, I'm not a sailor, but you know what, all the different terms. And you do that. And I think you do that, number one. And number two, you look for the stories that people are going to be talking about coming out of this. What are people going to be talking about in 2 years, right? Are they really going to be talking about tech and innovation disruption and outer space vacations and things like that again? Or are they going to be talking about something else? Personally, I think they're going to be talking about something else. And what we're trying to do at our firm is try to uncover what those ideas are, whether it's non-U.S. stocks, whether it's, believe it or not, Chinese. Maybe there's something going on in China. Remember, you know, a lot of the things that we're talking about here with central banks tightening and all that is the exact opposite in China. You know, they're not good guys. I'm not saying that. But maybe people will be talking about how, wow, Chinese stocks did so well because they were stimulating. Their central bank was easing while everybody else was doing the opposite. Maybe there's that. Maybe people are talking about commodities because things haven't eased up. You know, there's lots of different things to think about and to think creatively about. But the worst thing an investor can do in this environment is to panic, dive under the desk in the fetal position, and just say nothing's going to work. Because that's never true. There's always something somewhere, and we just got to figure out what it is and what the new story is going to be.
Rich, on behalf of Wise River Advisors and our clients, thank you again for taking the time. We know how busy you are, and we really do appreciate you taking time out of your day to speak with us and answer our questions. So thank you.
Yeah. My pleasure, guys.
Thanks so much
for the invitation. Okay.
All right.
Thanks,
have
everybody.
A great weekend, everyone.
All right. Thanks so
Take
much.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That does conclude the call for today. We thank you for your participation. I ask that you please disconnect your line.